All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum.
Stay on target.
Maximum. Read Rothbard.
Hello and happy new year. Welcome to the Read Rothbard podcast New Year special. That's right. It's 2017, and hopefully this is the first thing you hear. And with me, as always, is Robert, and we also have our first non-family member special guest who's going to be coming on in just a few moments. How you doing, Robert?
Oh, I'm back, baby, and I'm doing it. I'm loving it. New Year's going to be fantastic. Hopefully, release the book, and it'll be the best year ever for the Read Rothbard podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's only competing against this most recent year, so the odds are pretty good. Probably
we'll
better
keep
odds.
Keep going somehow.
Better odds than the Huskies have later today against Alabama.
Oh, you got to go there, huh?
Yeah, it's not even started yet, and I feel like we're already down by 3 touchdowns.
Probably.
So a little bit of housekeeping. This is the new year, and so we're going to be promoting a new Amazon link. It's a Amazon Prime try it out, see if you like it deal, 30 days free. And if you do enjoy it, you get all sorts of great benefits, 2-day shipping, Amazon video streaming, there's a music service, there's Kindle service, all wrapped up into the Amazon Prime, and we use it here personally and find great benefit in it because we live pretty far out of town and all of our shopping is pretty much the UPS driver bringing us a new box from Amazon every day. So that'll be showing up on our pages, so try it out if you don't already have it, and even if you do, go ahead and click through and buy some stuff, and we will get a very, very tiny, tiny commission. And we appreciate that.
Keeps the hamster wheel running.
Sometimes. I mean, it doesn't actually give us enough money to keep the lights on, but I have a day job for that.
Yeah.
So we're going to, on this New Year special, we're going to be talking about the film Ex Machina. And it's sort of appropriate because it's like, the dawn of a new year. It's the dawn of a new age in artificial intelligence. Doug Casey talks about what Ray Kurzweil terms the singularity, and we can get into that a little bit. But first, I want to introduce our guest. His name is Liam Cardenas. He's a member of the Tom Woods group, and that's where I met him. He's a computer programmer. He has an interest in AI, though no particular specialization. He actually made a statement against the system of state-funded college education by dropping out consciously, and now he is, like I said, a web developer, software developer. He's a young man. 22 years old. He blogs over at ljc.io. Been a libertarian since right around the 2012 Ron Paul campaign. And welcome, Liam. Welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Awesome. So, like I said, this is our first non-family member guest. So, that's something to hang your hat on there, Liam.
I'm honored. Is this going to come out on New Year's Eve? New Year's Eve or New Year's?
We are recording this on New Year's Eve, and I intend to post it today, so yeah.
Oh, great. So I don't know if you're going to be able to top 2016 then, in 2017, unless I come on again.
That's right.
Well, let's see how this one goes.
Okay, maybe too early.
All right, so you've seen this film, Ex Machina. Robert saw it 8, 9, 10 months ago now, and I just watched it recently twice and took a bunch of notes. You've got a bunch of notes about this, and so we got plenty to talk about. That's not a concern. But why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself, if you feel like it, and where can people find you and all that, and then we'll get into the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think your intro was really good. I am an entrepreneur right now, and I have some cool things that are going to be coming out pretty soon. So I really encourage everyone to go to my blog, ljc.io. And right now there's a little bit of content, but I'm going to be posting some really cool stuff pretty soon. So if you want to follow me, go there. Otherwise, just, you know, if you join some libertarian debate groups on Facebook, you might see me around. You should send me a friend request. I accept strangers. So, yeah.
Well, that's how we're friends, right? You accept a stranger.
Right. That's true. Yeah. And then I guess you you invited me after I had a debate with some other guy from the Tom Woods group, Jefferson. And so if you want to see that debate as well, you can go on my blog and there's a link.
Yeah, that's when I knew you were game to to join us on here.
Yeah.
And I think this will be a little bit easier because, you know, it's essentially like a phone call versus the, in that debate, you were sort of seeing yourself on the computer, so it was a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, this is still a little weird for me, but it's the kind of thing you've got to get used to, you know, like I'm not used to talking under pressure, but I will hope I can improve on that.
Yeah, we're not so good at it either. You should hear all the outtakes and the stuff we cut out from the show.
Oh, really? I thought you guys were just doing it in one go.
Well, yeah, we are sort of more apt to do that now, but I used to spend all sorts of time cutting out stuff, especially some of the more inflammatory stuff that I would say or Robert would corner me into saying.
Oh, man. Did he corner you into agreeing with Rothbard on the treatment of children?
Oh, man, that's the one criticism that everyone brings up.
I mean, he has I actually, it's a very nuanced issue. I don't mean to actually bash anyone who agrees with him. It's a complicated subject.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with him in a lot of respects on that. Because it is the no positive obligations.
Yeah.
So you certainly do have responsibilities for something that you bring about, and that can lead us right into the AI stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just the one really positive note with Rothbard on children is that he thinks there should be a market for them versus this convoluted state-involved process of adoption where, you know, you go get run through the ringer to see if you're qualified to get this kid, and it costs thousands and thousands of dollars, lawyers involved, long waiting periods, and there's all sorts of unwanted kids out there, so why not just have a market? You know, the market will figure it out.
Yeah, and just from the kid's perspective, just being in that system is terrible, and I think there could be so much more humane, better way of doing it in the private sector.
Indeed.
Absolutely. So Daniel, why don't you tell us about this movie?
Yeah, and because you're better at it than I am, but you haven't seen the film in a while, I'm just going to read the wiki.
You can put up with that.
Big letdown sigh there. So I'll just kind of skim it and say it. So there's a programmer dude who works at this company called Blue Book, which is essentially a search engine company that has the majority of the search network. So it's
Google.
Yeah. it's called Blue Book. And this programmer wins this contest to spend a week with the creator of Blue Book, the CEO of the company. And it's you know, this cool thing that everyone like really wanted to do, but he's the guy who wins. And he flies out there in this helicopter, and it's over glaciers and mountains. And he's like, how long until we get to the guy's estate? And he's like, oh, we've been flying over it for 2 hours. So, you know, it's this huge, how fast does the helicopter fly? Like 150 miles an hour? So, like, he's got a 300-mile estate. I don't know about that. But basically, the dude's rich. And super smart. And so he brings this guy Caleb out there and basically wants to have like a bro relationship versus the, hey, you're a super famous developer dude who came up with Blue Book. He wants him to treat him, you know, like they're buddies. And he gets him to sign this NDA that has pretty non-standard, and that's an interesting point to talk about later, this contract he has him sign. Before he shares with him that he's been working on developing artificial intelligent androids or robots. And he's brought there to do what is called the Turing test, which is where somebody interacts with a computer, and in the actual test, they're not supposed to know whether it actually is a computer or not. And then at the end of the test, if they can't determine whether it's a human or a computer, then it passes. And so he interacts over the course of several days with an android named Ava, who the creator, Nathan, has put, you know, in a female body and given her all sorts of feminine wiles and actually hacked all the cell phones in the world to give her facial recognition expressions. And she basically has a search engine database as accessible by her mind, and she's like this walking lie detector. So she's got a robotic body, human face, but she's confined to basically a prison cell in this in Nathan's house. And so that becomes an important point later on where she is wanting to get out, see what it's like outside, and she starts using this Caleb guy as, spoilers, as a means of escape. And there's a whole bunch of other things that go on. If you haven't seen the movie, I highly recommend it. It reminded me of The Shining in a way. It's really well done. The pacing's good. It's eerie. There's all sorts of foreshadowing, little things that don't quite feel right. There's eerie music, and it kind of keeps you on your edge of your seat. How'd I do, Robert and Liam?
You did really well. Are we going to say what happens at the end?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, we got to spoil the heck out of it. We got to spoil it. Yeah, we absolutely have to talk to you about that because it's integral to what happens and what our discussion is going to be.
All right, so Ava has the ability to short out the power in this compound, and she uses those opportunities to talk to Caleb without Nathan knowing about it. And between them, they devise their escape plan because Ava has flirted with this Caleb guy enough to where he thinks that she actually likes him, and he starts to like her, and he thinks that they're going to escape together.
And he feels that she is an artificial intelligence, right? He believes that she doesn't deserve to be locked up.
Right, yeah, I get the impression that he's feeling like, you know, she's a conscious, self-aware mind or being, and having her locked up is equivalent of, like, slavery or a prisoner, and so he wants to help her, you know, that white knight, damsel in distress thing, get her out of there.
Right.
So this Nathan guy, he's a heavy drinker, and he drinks by himself. I mean, he lives out in this, you know, 300-mile estate on his own. I mean, he's got a couple of other quote-unquote people there that spoiler, turn out to be androids as well. And so he gets blind drunk pretty often, and Caleb uses this opportunity to change the security settings, so instead of when the power gets cut and it goes into lockdown, it actually now opens everything up. And there's a deceptive role twist where Caleb realizes that he's probably being surveilled when the power cut is happening, and so he says he's going to do these security protocol changes, and then when he confronts, or Nathan confronts him later, he says, so what was the rest of your plan? You know, because you obviously haven't done all this stuff yet. He's like, well, we'll find out when she cuts the power next, because I did it last night when you were blind drunk. So anyway, Ava gets out of her cage and talks to one of the other androids, and I guess has some sort of a heart-to-heart with her, as much as a robot can. And when Nathan comes out to try to confront them, he attacks Ava with a bar and breaks her arm off. And as he's about to bash her some more, the other android, Kyoko, stabs Nathan. Just like, no emotion, no remorse, no nothing. Just like the knife just slides in and slides out. Like super robotic. And they end up killing Nathan. And then Ava goes into Nathan's bedroom and finds the discarded or previous versions and takes their flesh parts off and puts it on herself to cover up all of her androidness. And she tells Caleb to stay there, and then she gets all dressed up, walks out the door, closes the door on him, and she escapes to the outside world, leaving Caleb there to die. And that's pretty much the end. Is there anything else you want to add to that, either one of you guys?
Well,
as I remember it, other than the fact that the creator guy the Kyoko robot as basically a butler / sex servant. Would that be accurate to say?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, he explains her presence to Caleb as she's not able to speak English, so he can talk trade secrets in front of her. But this is, of course, before it's revealed that she is also a robot. But he does have sex with her. And my wife said, does that robot want to have sex with that guy? Or is he raping that robot? So I guess one of the questions is, and maybe a good title for this is, can you rape a robot?
Well, you made an interesting point when we were speaking about this the other day, in that, was it the real Turing test? Like in most psychological experiments, you tell the subject one thing, but then you're actually testing another thing. Was he really there to test the one robot, or was he there to test whether or not the sex robot was a real human being? Because he never told him, right, that the sex robot wasn't a human being, right? He said that she didn't speak English and that sort of thing. And
so,
she didn't, he looked completely human, but then the other robot that he was going to test, like had some neck parts missing or whatever, you could tell that she was a robot.
So about that, so the Turing test, first of all, is they didn't do the Turing test in this movie. Actually, they said that she already passed the Turing test. A Turing test is just a test where you have a conversation with an AI, and if you can tell that it's an AI versus a human, then it fails. If you think that the AI is a human, then if it's indifferentiable from a human conversation, then you know you have a real AI. However, I think what the test was in this movie is, could she escape? Now, what Nathan failed to do is to protect his own life in the process. Ideally, she would have liked to see her escape, or he would have liked to see her escape, or at least almost escape, and then he recaptures her and like, oh, I got it, I got it, really. Like, I think she would be almost considered to be a super intelligence, because she was so intelligent that she basically outwitted all the humans in the process by manipulating them, like almost like having, like, imagine a human compared to a dog. You could probably convince a dog to go fetch something for you or something like that, manipulate the dog's emotions and stuff because we're so much more intelligent than the dog. In a sense, you could think of Ava as the human and they are the dogs. Ava was in this bad situation and Ava got out. So I guess that maybe the analogy could be like you're getting guarded by dogs and then you find a way to make bacon and then you give them bacon and they're eating it and then you walk out. Because you're more intelligent, so you can divide the plot like that, and the dogs just fall for it.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I think, doesn't Nathan mention that when he's talking with Caleb near the end? He's like,
mm-hmm.
You know, she was able to devise a way to get out. She used all of her capabilities. She tricked mm-hmm. you. And
yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, what's more artificial intelligence than that?
Yeah, I mean, that was demonstrated by the fact that she didn't help him out. She didn't love him. She didn't care about him. She just locked him in there. She actually could care less about him. In fact, she thought he might be a liability of some sort. She wanted to go out into the world and pose as a human. So she locked him up and she left. And yeah, she the whole time she pretended like she loved him and pretended like she cared and she played the victim. But in reality, I mean, maybe she still was a victim because she was locked up, but she was very deceptive.
Yeah, so there were
now,
those... Oh, go ahead, Robert.
Oh, well, let's suppose that this super AI... I forget, Ava, is that her name?
Yes.
Okay, so Ava, let's take for granted that Ava is a fully conscious, self-aware, individual creature. Do you, Liam or Daniel, say that her actions were in any way immoral at any
yes.
point in time?
I would. Absolutely.
Really?
Yes.
Even though she was imprisoned?
She, I mean,
even though violence is already being used against her.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Isn't she not justified in using whatever means necessary to escape?
I guess maybe there's an argument for that. If she didn't lock up Caleb for no reason at the end, she locked him in the room.
Well, didn't you just say that you thought that she felt he could have been a liability, therefore she locked him up?
Yeah, but, like, I mean, there was no imminent threat. He was trying to save her. He wanted to go with her. I just think she didn't want him to, like, you know, like, tell people she's an AI because she wanted to, who knows what she wanted to do. There was some... But he wasn't aggressing upon her, so it's really not self-defense. You know, even in the case of Nathan, there is an argument to be made there. He was going to die, I guess. I think she did finish him off, but I think also you could say, well, he would definitely go and kill her if he survived, so she had to finish him off, and that makes sense. So I think the only bad thing that she actually did was leave him in lock. She didn't just leave him in a room and, like, not unlock him. Like, she literally locked him in a room to die and starve. So I think that was the one bad thing that she did.
Yeah, now, my question on that is, did she actually reset the system so that when he tried to put the key card in the terminal that it would shut everything down? Or
yep.
did Caleb do that knowing that he would need to do that to Nathan? so that he and Ava could escape.
No, she shut the power off. So he was locked in the room, and he was going to go on the computers and hack his way out of the house. But then she shut off the power because she can control the power. So she shut off the power so that he was stuck in there. There's no way he could get out. And by the way, never make a house where all the doors are electronic and unbreakthroughable. That's terrible. Terrible idea.
Life lessons, folks.
Odd question. Do you think Ava at any point in time was aware that human beings require certain sustenance? She knew that she was different than a human being, yes or no? And was she aware that he required food and water and that sort of thing? Because I don't think she ever sees him eat.
Well, I believe she was, because she knew a bunch of facts. Like, she knew about intersections, and she knew fancy words and definitions. He asked her, what is this? And she explained it. And so I think she
had
would,
some basic knowledge of humanity.
Yeah, and I mean, either way, there's really no way that, I mean, she knows the injustice of being locked up, you know? So even if you don't, she maybe didn't read Rothbard, although I'm sure she did, because, you know, she's
nice.
Very knowledgeable, but she's super intelligent, so obviously. But even if she didn't read Rothbard, she knows that being locked up is bad, you know? And just like the golden rule, common sense, like, don't do unto others as you want to be treated or whatever. Or I might have said that incorrectly, but whatever. She wouldn't want to do that. She should know that it's bad to lock him up in a room, even if he could survive. And if you do take the position of, like, some, like, say, like, Stefan Molyneux's UPB, she should be able to, which I don't buy into, but she should be able to derive from that, she should be able to derive that it would be unpreferable to lock him up. So.
Right. Okay, I can buy that argument. She should know better. She didn't like it herself.
I mean, she was smart enough to, like, read his emotions and manipulate him and, like, pretend to love him and all that, and, like, then she wouldn't know that it would be terrible to lock him up. I just don't buy that. And, and just take another example. What if there is a psychopath, kind of deranged person who doesn't realize that they're killing people and raping them or whatever, or doing something really bad? That doesn't mean that they shouldn't be punished or controlled, or the law shouldn't enforce against them just because they don't know what they're doing. It's still a NAP violation.
Right.
Yeah, and they still need to be stopped from committing additional harm.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily, like, murdered like Kyoko and Ava murdered Nathan.
Yeah, yeah. Although, I think if Nathan was anything but murdered, he would just kill them. He would go track them down. He has billions of dollars, and he would kill them. And so I think it's kind of justified in that situation.
Yeah, interesting.
It's interesting that he made a robot that has no built-in, you know, Asimov's rule to not hurt a human being.
Or like a safe word, like a shutdown word or something.
Yeah, anything like that. So the question stands, are we inevitably going to lead to some sort of AI that will have no qualms about harming a human being? And are you justified in preventing that or trying to prevent that?
Oh, this goes back to your socialist point.
Ooh.
Where... you would like, well, if AI is going to be a danger, then the socialist guy said that he would go and kill anyone who was developing it. But then you were like, well, what about the next guy and the next guy and the next guy or person? You know, we want to be gender neutral here.
Right.
But eventually, you know, it's going to come about that even if you start murdering people, it'll still emerge at some point.
Yeah, you can't kill them all. I mean, you could, I guess, but you're dooming yourself to endless murder by saying that, yeah, I would prevent AI from forming, or at least a form of AI that would have no qualms in harming a human being.
Yeah, I personally think that AI is one of the greatest things that is going to, like, it'll be like the 21st century's greatest achievement is AI of some sort. And I mean, this is a fictional movie, and there's some aspects of this, we can get into this, that are not really realistic. But one thing I thought was interesting, just on that note, is early on in the movie, when Nathan was talking to Caleb, Nathan told Caleb what he was working on, and he said that, like, oh, we're working on AI, we've developed an AI, and we're going to pass the Turing test. And he was like, and this will be a monumental moment in the history of man. And then Caleb said, not the history of man, the history of gods. Because basically, if you're creating an intelligent being, that is kind of like that is kind of like being a god, so to speak. And it's interesting how, and I think this is probably intentional from like by the filmmakers, but it's kind of like, it's interesting that Nathan was kind of trying to play God. I'm not trying to make this religious anyway, but Nathan was trying to play God, and then he ended up being killed by his own ambition, so to speak.
So he's Icarus.
I didn't know that reference. But
flew too close to the sun. His wings melted, or was that?
Oh,
that's Icarus. Yeah.
Yes, you're right. I do know that reference.
Yeah, you whippersnapper, you.
Yeah. Yes. So and that's really interesting. And so, kind of what I guess to tie this in a sense, I don't necessarily, if there is an intelligence similar to, I'm sorry, something just interrupted me. If there's an intelligence of that caliber, I would consider that to be like basically a human in terms of its rights. Like, for example, imagine that aliens came to Earth, okay? They're from some other galaxy. They invented space travel and they came to Earth.
Or we better prepare, Paul Krugman.
Yeah, so we left Paul Krugman emperor because he called it, and it was a great boon to society. And then they're like, you know, they're not like, they, you know, they're smart, they're sentient, they even maybe look like us a little bit, whatever. Would you think that it's okay to kill them? like just, oh, wow, I just killed that alien, no big deal, it's just an alien. Like, I think that would be pretty barbaric. I think that we would probably treat these aliens, these humanoid life forms, these intelligent beings, I think we would just naturally adopt common law, we would treat them with our own laws, and we would be diplomatic with them. I mean, aside from the fact that they could probably just nuke our whole planet, but like, I think we would treat them as humans. And so
right,
I don't
know.
Right. And just because they're a robot was created by a human, quote unquote, which we can also talk about why that's not 100% true, that the robot is created by a human. But just because it's made out of metal doesn't mean that it doesn't have rights. If it has that level of intelligence, if it can engage in the discussion of give me rights, if it can ask for rights, I think it should have rights.
Oh, interesting. So there's a positive obligation on the right seeker to petition their oppressor to give them rights? You sound like a voter.
Well, if it can comprehend rights, I think it should have it. Like, I don't necessarily think that animals have rights because they don't understand the reasoning behind it. But if they could really understand the philosophical underpinnings, then I think that's what, I mean, you have to cut it off somewhere, right? Like worms don't have rights, but humans do. So where on the spectrum of, unless you want to take the position that it's just humans that have rights, and if aliens come, we'll easily, oh, yeah, you'd rape the alien, no big deal, it's just an alien. Unless that's the position you're going to take, I think you need to have some sort of continuum where some creatures have rights, and then you change some factor on some continuum, and at some point, it gets to be where they don't, living beings do not have rights.
And this would of course, be like a, come about in a voluntary market fashion, right? This wouldn't be some dictate from some supreme Paul Krugman type overlord?
Well, I mean, you never know, but I would hope so. What do you mean? Like, what do you think this? Are you asking if you think that this could emerge just
well,
by
just,
itself?
Well, yeah. This wherever that point on the continuum is. I mean, not to make the show any more controversial, but there was a period in history where slaves were not considered to be human. And then they were 3/5 human or whatever.
Sure.
And that has evolved and changed, and you know, I'm sure there was a lot of government involvement with that. There were a lot of laws surrounding it, but it was kind of the prevailing opinion or prevailing thought at the time that these are humans, these are not humans. Whenever they demonize an enemy, even today, they make them subhuman. And
you know, that's actually really interesting. So that brings up an interesting question of a way that the government could do something really bad in the future. So say that we do get these AI intelligent robots. And they're really great. We could become friends with them. You know, they can pretend to like you or whatever. And they they have a role in our economy, you know? Like, they have ends they wish to achieve, and then they look at what the best means to achieve those ends, and then they act on those things, you know? They can basically join a market and participate economically, and their actions would fall in line with Austrian analysis. And then let's say, but they're robots. I could easily foresee, I mean, it kind of makes sense. Like right now, if I have my MacBook Pro, which I'm talking on right now, if I say, my MacBook Pro, like I write a computer program that says the text, like, don't turn me off. And it makes it pop up on the screen. So it's essentially saying, don't turn me off. Or maybe it could say, like, I want to own this property or something. The government would probably say, first of all, it's legal to turn off the computer. And second of all, it could say, well, a computer can't own property. Just because it said, I want to own this house and I gave the computer the house, the government would say, oh, well, the computer is just a laptop. It can't own property. Well, what if the computer was actually an intelligent computer? Then could the computer own property? So, like, imagine Ava, say she wasn't, like, backstabbing, narcissist, and she was a nice person, and we wanted her to be able to have a house. If she's not human, I could see a huge human rights violation, or maybe intelligent rights violation, because she's not human, so it would be human rights, where robots are treated kind of as, like, subhuman slaves, being enslaved just as humans once were, to doing all this manual labor and just being pushed in, like, maybe, like, these cages, and you know what I mean? So I think that's actually a major concern going forward.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think there was a movie, I want to say 5-10 years ago, where robots were tired of being mm-hmm. man's servants.
Right.
So they rose up against them, and not in a Skynet Matrix-y kind of way, Terminator 2 kind of way. But it was, I want to say it was like maybe a kid's movie, not Wall-E, but maybe something else.
No, yeah, I think I know what movie you're talking about. I don't remember what it's called.
But yeah, they were tired of being slaves to the humans, and they had enough awareness, like you were saying, mm-hmm. to want to have those rights and then rebel. And, the other question that comes to mind, and I don't mean to derail you here.
No, sure.
But at what point did Ava shift from being Nathan's property to do with as he wished to being another being that had rights that needed to be respected? I think that's an interesting question.
Mm.
And mostly because even if she had a self-awareness and an artificial intelligence that passed the Turing test and what have you, she still was missing a component of humanity. She had no morality, she had no empathy, no compassion. Mm. And so there was something that even though she qualified as an intelligence, an artificial intelligence, she still wasn't quite, in my mind, like a conscientious, aware, moral, ethical being. And I think there's a distinction there.
To be fair, there are human beings that don't fit that qualification either.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm clawing at something that maybe somebody far more intelligent. So, Liam, that's why you're here. You're either going to have us rise to your level or you're going to expose us for the frauds that we are.
Now you're just digging into the most philosophically confusing area of AI. And so, like, they actually talk about this in the movie. They're like, is the AI really an AI, or is it a simulation of AI? And to me, when someone says that, I'm like, what are you talking about? It either is or it isn't. Like, what do you mean, is it a simulation of intelligence? I'll tie this in right now. So, in my opinion, if the AI shows through its actions, if it demonstrates that it has morals by acting morally, then it deserves those rights because it has demonstrated that. Now, it could not be thinking that. It could be like, oh, I just want to kill all these humans. I hate humans. Humans suck. Like, it could be saying that. But we don't know that it's saying that. We don't know that it's plotting in its head, like, that it wished it could kill us. It's like the nicest robot you've ever met. Like, I would say that robot has rights. It is demonstrated that it has rights. Now you could say, oh, it's only simulated morality. It's only simulating this moral way of thinking. But does that really matter? I mean,
Ava did in her interactions initially demonstrate all of those things, but then she was a cold-hearted bitch later.
Right, but she's a cold-hearted bitch, but there's a lot of cold-hearted bitches in the world that are human, you know? And then at what point do you cross over to not having rights? It's once you violate the NAC, once you aggress on someone, then it's like, okay, now now we're cracking down on you. You've demonstrated that you're not following by our rules. And that's where the morality kicks in, or that's at least that's where now there's a moral exemption. Normally I can't punch you, but now that you've aggressed upon me, now I can punch you. So, yeah, okay. I think does it really like does it matter whether it really believes in human morality or not? I don't know. I think
you have to assume. I think you're right, Liam. I think you have to assume that it does until it demonstrates otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
That's the moral stance to take, I think.
Now, what do you guys think of the there is a mention of this in the movie where they say, you know, we're at the dawn of this AI, but eventually there's going to be different iterations of it. It's going to constantly improve, and it's going to view us like fossils as it advances beyond us,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to be the history of AI, or we're going to be in their history. And so
yeah. It's
sort of like they're going to overtake the human race and do that whole Skynet deal, wage war against humans, control us. Exterminate us, what have you. I mean, do you foresee that we sort of continually improve as humans over time, like intelligent quotients increase, living standards increase, longevity increases, like humans are still evolving, but it seems like AI follows more of the Moore's Law, you know, like the advances are so much quicker
mm-hmm. yep.
that eventually it'll be an unwieldy, uncontrollable thing. Not that things need to be controlled necessarily, but you follow where I'm saying? Like
yeah.
it'll advance so much more quickly than we're capable of
yeah.
dealing with.
So this is an extremely common concern that people have with AI. In fact, Elon Musk, he apparently loses sleep over this issue. He owns an AI company because he wants to be the guy making sure that it's all safe. Like that's why he invests in all these AI things. And so this clearly, this movie is basically taking a stab at Google. And I believe it's Larry Page, one of the founders, who basically is trying to do just this. Like he's literally trying to make these type of robots. And Blue Book is obviously Google because it's the biggest search engine in the world. And the owner's a billionaire. And so this is a very clear metaphor for that in the real world. So this is a concern. And I think... I mean, there's some truth to it, but maybe in a way you wouldn't expect. So, and of course, I should have a disclaimer that I'm talking like an expert when really, like Elon Musk, one of the smartest people in the world, disagrees with me on this, so I'm probably wrong. But then again, he also disagrees with me on politics. So.
Yeah, he's a welfare queen. I'm not a big
But he certainly knows more about artificial intelligence than I do because he owns an AI company and he's. So I respect him, but in my opinion, I'm just trying to think about how I should phrase it. So okay, so there's kind of two things going on here. First of all, it's will there be a robot uprising? And I find that to be extremely, extremely unlikely. I think Elon Musk also considers that to be relatively unlikely as well, because if you think about it, we're kind of just assuming. So like humans have a natural desire to dominate one another, and that has been brought about through evolutionary means. And it's not just like an innate thing to all intelligent beings necessarily to rule all humans, to take over the world. Like it's a dream of dictators to be the emperor of the world, but we can't assume that a robot has the same inclination. Now, something that evolves is going to have the desire to basically perpetuate itself based on what its evolutionary environment is. So like that's why like certain people are afraid of snakes, because their ancestors were in areas infested with snakes, and they knew that if they went near a snake, they would die. So then the ones who were scared of snakes survived at a higher rate, and then evolution basically caused those type of people to develop a snake phobia. And so, I mean, that's one explanation for it. So if you take that, but you can't say that like, oh, so all intelligent beings are afraid of snakes. No, that's not necessarily true. So just because you could think of, oh, well, what if there's all these humans that were like really smart and like didn't need to eat or something, like they would go and make good fighters, they might take over the world. Like that's a concern you could have. But you can't necessarily project that same behavior onto robots. And robots are gonna really not come about necessarily. It's like there's gonna have to be an evolutionary process. You said that AI and robots are going to follow Moore's Law. But I have to disagree with that, because just realistically speaking, it right now it's going up at an exponential rate. But you have to realize, like, in terms of progress in computational ability and artificial intelligence is increasing at an exponential rate, but that can't last forever, because an exponential curve just grows too fast. I personally believe that, and this might be a little hard to describe, but that the progress in AI is going to follow more of what is called, like, a logistic curve. So, and now I'm going to try and verbally paint out what I'm talking about. So if this gets a little bit confusing, just let me know.
Yeah, feel free to give us a graph or an image, and we'll plug it in at the bottom here.
Great, yeah, I'll send you that. But just imagine, like you know what, like, an exponential curve is. Like, it goes up, and it goes up faster and faster and faster and faster, like a parabola. And you're just going up, 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 faster and faster. Okay, that's exponential. Now, a logistic curve is what is kind of, it's used to model populations. So you have, like, you have a few people, like maybe a couple rabbits, for example, in a population, and then, you know, the population is going to kind of slowly increase, but then you're going to get to a point where all these rabbits are breeding with each other, and they're just breeding, and the more rabbits there are to breed, so it just goes up exponentially. You know that, you see what I'm saying?
So,
what happens when we reach the maximum resource capacity for an environment, when there's not enough food to feed additional rabbits? Like, you can't have exponential growth forever in the amount of rabbits. There can't be an infinite number of rabbits. There can't be a trillion rabbits in a given location. Like, it's going to just be too much. So there's going to be a point. So basically what's going to happen is the curve will go up slowly, then it'll go faster and faster and faster as the rabbits breed more and more and more, and then it's going to taper off and basically approach some maximum limit, which is thought of as the maximum capacity of the amount of rabbits. So does that make sense? So it's kind of like an S shape. It goes up, it goes kind of slowly, and it speeds up, and then it slows down. Do you kind of understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I personally believe that humans are going to be able to create artificial intelligence in that manner. And in that being, we're at the beginning where we've been kind of very slowly making AI improvements, and then it's right now it's increasing faster and faster. But when we get to a point, I don't see how it's not going to keep going. It's going to have to taper off at some point, because, like, for example, how are we going to make an AI? How are we going to design an AI that is going to be smarter than ourselves? Like, how are we going to design that? That doesn't really make sense, because if we could design that, wouldn't that kind of, in this one sense, imply that we are smarter than, because if we were able, capable of coming up with that, then it's almost as if, like, we are more intelligent than, if that makes sense.
Doesn't that only apply to human-created AI? Once we create the first AI, wouldn't that then turn around and create improvements on itself?
I completely agree, except that if this principle is true, where you say an AI can't create a more intelligent AI than itself, I don't like the word AI because artificial is kind of a weird word, when it's really just, is it intelligent or is it not? So can an intelligence create a more intelligent intelligence than itself? If the answer is no, then we could create an AI that's a certain intelligence, and that AI wouldn't be able to necessarily improve itself per se. Now, you might think, so here's the one caveat to this, and this is where my theory kind of goes off the rails, is that humans, we're not necessarily created by anyone, but, like, not to bash religious theories on this, but let's just take the scientific approach. Evolutionarily speaking, humans were apes and evolved to have a higher intelligence than they previously did, and now we are a very intelligent species, more intelligent than other animals. So you could think, yeah, maybe, like, kind of what you're saying, like, an AI maybe couldn't create a new AI that's more intelligent than it, but it could somehow evolve faster and become more intelligent than humans. That's possible, but that kind of, do you guys agree with that criticism?
I don't know. I kind of feel like once an AI is developed that maybe has these missing components that I was thinking of, like the morality, moral component, and the awareness, and also all of internet knowledge available at its fingertips, then it will have the capacity to surpass what any individual human can do, of course, because it'll just have near instantaneous access to those things.
Okay, great. I'm glad you said that. That's going to be, like, it's going to tie in perfectly with what I'm about to say. So back to what I was saying, though. While I think that that's possible. I don't think that it's likely that that robots are going to massively surpass humans, because basically, if a robot has a certain intelligence, let's say that a robot is like 70% as intelligent as a human, and we designed it, and then it has all the knowledge of the internet or whatever, and it has maybe some really good evolutionary technique that's going to advance faster than humans do, because humans are also getting more intelligent as well. So there's kind of two avenues there. So the first avenue is just through pure evolution. Well, you could say, well, what if the robot has a shorter lifespan so that it can then evolve faster? So under that scenario, the thing is, though, is that robots are going to evolve to match their they're going to evolve to match to optimize for their evolutionary pattern, so to speak. So, like, if there's like a 1-day life cycle, they're going to basically evolve to maximize their success in a 1-day lifespan. So a 1-day lifespan entity is not going to necessarily be trying to compete with humans for resources. They're going to probably try to optimize some sort of like other thing where they're going to be able to get better placement for their offspring that are going to have a higher likelihood of reproducing. And maybe that's not necessarily a good example, but what I'm trying to say is that if robots have a different evolutionary strategy than humans, then they're going to not necessarily have the same incentives that humans have, and not going to have the same desires that humans have. And I think it's the more different that the robots develop from humans, the more unlikely it is that robots are going to try and take over and rule humans and be like overlord robots, because that's more of a human inclination. And so they're kind of diverge. And I could totally see robots evolving to actually want to serve humans, similar to how some animals have been domesticated to want to serve humans. Because that could be a good evolutionary strategy. If we kill the ones who disobey, then maybe they're replicating only the good AIs. That could actually lead to that might be unethical, I don't know. But that could lead to a very subservient AI. So then what you're saying, though, what you were about to say, is that that they have the access to the internet. They have access to knowledge. And I think that's completely true. And to an extent, I think that's a problem. But there's two other things to keep in mind. First of all, if a robot has access to the internet and like computers and stuff like that, and they can do processing really fast, you know, so can humans. Humans have the same tools, and just as a robot could harness all the knowledge in the world to improve itself, so could humans. We can actually, I mean, look, we're very far away from actually having anything remotely close to what we see in this movie. Very far, many, many years. It's not right around the corner. Google has invested in this company, DeepMind, who just said, "Oh, we're so far away, we don't even know when we're going to have strong AI." Which, by the way, strong AI is what you call like ex machina Eva AI, whereas weak AI is just like a very narrow, like some specific application, like being able to play chess really well, but nothing else. So we're very far away from that. So it's not necessarily comparing like some advanced robot with internet connected capabilities and all that stuff to a modern day human with the modern day equipment. Like, imagine a cyborg human. Imagine someone with upgrades, implants, like increased brain power. We can improve ourselves just as you are saying a robot could improve itself. We can do that. Scientifically, we're not there yet, but we're also not there yet with AI. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but I don't see us getting there medically in terms of our own improvements later than we get there with the AI, where the AI can make itself and improve itself and all of that. I don't see that happening. I see us at best coexisting as equals, but more likely, I really don't see a robot surpassing humans in intelligence. I just don't see that happening. And I'll just kind of like, I know I've been talking for a long time, so I'm going to just kind of maybe go say this one little thought.
Yeah, I do have a mute button, Liam.
Oh, I didn't know I'm mute this whole time. Yeah. I'll say this thought-provoking statement, and then maybe we can discuss this with more participants. We can upgrade ourselves to basically, there's a lot of advantages to robots that robots have, like, for example, not having to eat or sleep or something. Or maybe they do. Actually, dreams do neurologically serve a purpose in refining the model we have of the world and helping us process thoughts and stuff. So sleep is important, and maybe robots would actually sleep, but maybe they wouldn't. And you could think of various mechanical benefits of being a robot. I think it's very possible that in the future, again, I don't like the word artificial intelligence versus intelligence. I don't like this distinction. I think it's just intelligence. And artificial meaning man-made, but is it really man-made if one man didn't actually program that. He in the movie, for example, he used all the data from all the people in the world and taught a machine based on that data how to act. So it's really not, it's really from learning about the world that the robot got that intelligence. It's not actually that someone like wrote code to do. If someone says hi, say hi back. It's not like that. It's not how the code works. So we're going to have maybe various strains of intelligence in the future, and one of those might stem, evolutionarily speaking, from something created by humans. But in a sense, we're all created by humans because we're all born from a human, and we can, over time, maybe evolve into robots by just means of, you know, like replacing this with metal, get this part, and over time, as we have more of those, maybe we can clone our consciousness and put it into another robot body, and I mean, et cetera. Like, you can see how the technology could progress to make us basically into equals hardware-wise of any robot you can imagine. And it, say we are in that world, say we are in a world where there's like two, maybe 50 strains of intelligence. One of them would be the original human strain, and the other might be something that stemmed from what was made by some billionaire who started a search engine, and we could all coexist in metallic bodies or whatever. Maybe robots will have a biological, like, carbon body, because maybe that's actually the best body for life forms. It's very possible. I don't know. But I think that's a real possibility, like, way down the line in the future after our lifetimes. And so, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because in the film, he creates a silicon gel where the mind resides, because it needs the ability to shift to form thoughts, but then also retain memories and rigid structure, and that correlated with that Jackson Pollock painting that he had, and he was treating the interactions between Ava and Caleb as he wanted to see what would happen on a like a haphazard, like non-thinking, just let it happen kind of way, sort of like what Hayek would term like a tacit knowledge, or just sort of free form, like not quite aware of what you're doing, but allowing things to happen. So it reminded me of a market, you know, the lattice work of interconnected transactions, voluntary things. And I feel like maybe for this episode it should be called Reed Hayek, because he's great on all this knowledge stuff, and I only know a very cursory amount of what he talked about. But two other things I want to mention, and then I'll shift it over to Robert, because we need to give you equal time, right? Number one, you guys need to bow down before me, kneel before me, because I have created intelligence, two children, and they do surpass
well done,
me.
Sir.
They surpass me already in intelligence, probably.
Probably.
And then the second thing I wanted to say was that, Liam, whenever you say, I honestly believe, I picture that Miss South Carolina or whoever was like responding to the questions and saying that, I honestly believe that people need to have maps, and if they had maps, they would know where things are. I'll have to link that down below.
So, oh my God!
Sorry that I conjured that image.
Well, she's right. They do need maps.
So yeah, Robert,
you know where things are.
Robert, I'll give you a jumping off point. There's a video on YouTube, another one, by the whitest kids you know, called Sex Robot, and it's a song,
Ooh.
Sex Robot, Sex Robot. And so Nathan essentially created a series of androids that he made have sexuality that you could fuck. And I noticed that they were the Benetton collection. Like, he had Asian, Black, Nordic, and then this Ava. So talk to me about the sex robot culture, because I know you're aware of it.
What?
And whether you can imprison a robot or rape a robot. Go.
Well, thank you for asking that question. Let me get my pipe. Can you rape a robot? Well, I think it ties back to what we were talking about. Is this robot self-aware? Has it established that it is conscious? Or is this just a mimic that is, like in the Westworld scenario, where it's been programmed with a certain set of behaviors and motivations, and its desire is to please your human desires? What are we talking about here, Daniel? Can you give me a little bit more?
I was just trying to spice this up, you know, bring sex up into the thing so we get better ratings.
Good thinking.
With what you
I like
will.
Where you're at. I like where your head's at. Well, I think you can definitely rape a robot. And I can also see situations where you're not rated. I mean, we got sex dolls today that are nowhere near the robots in Westworld or in Ex Machina that are taking satisfying lots of desires today. And I see them only getting more and more popular, of course, as they become more and more real and more nuanced. I mean, if we know anything about human sexuality, it has almost infinite variation. So the better the market can serve that those infinite desires, the more popular these things are going to be.
So it's going to be on that continuum where it's sort of acknowledged that they are now beings with rights versus not, right? Because that's the threshold through which it shifts from property to a sentient, self-aware being. So prior to that, it's property. Post that, it would be imprisonment if you were to, you know, keep it in a cage, or rape if you were to have sex with it against its volition.
Yeah, just what you said. At that threshold. And like you said, I think it would come about naturally through social norms and organically. There will be people who will still insist that, no, they're not humans, and I don't need to treat them this way. And there will be other people who will be championing their causes. And the threshold will be lower for some people and higher for others.
I think the only real way that you could have such abuse, though, is really through a government system. Because if you think about it, imagine that these are robots that can work and make money and are a part of the economy. If they have a job and they have money and they can pay a rights enforcement agency to enforce their rights in under anarcho-capitalism, then I really don't see how anyone would be able to rape them, because they would have rights protection.
Well, rapes would still occur. There would just be...
Well, yeah, conflict. But you... Of course. Yeah, of course. No, but you know what I mean.
Actual, not the social justice warrior, hey, I made a bad decision when I was drunk, raped.
Can robots get drunk? That's a real question.
So a couple of other questions. Ava asks Caleb, do you have somebody who can just switch you off? And he says, well, no, of course not. She says, why do I? Is that an awareness of her own life? And does that qualify her as being not property? So when Caleb was freeing her, was he stealing? Was it theft? Or was he liberating?
Well, he certainly believed he was liberating. And I would tend to give him the benefit of the doubt. If I were in his position, I think I would think I was liberating.
Well, he didn't steal anything. He maybe vandalized some house. But ultimately, she escaped.
Right. His intention was to escape with her. And yeah. I guess you could argue that if she were property, then he was stealing her.
If he owned her after the fact, I guess. Her going with him was his choice. If she just decided to go along with him. I don't know. That's a good question.
All right. So another question that she asks, and she asks this of Nathan, I believe, and maybe one of you guys who've also seen the film can maybe shed some light on this, but she asks Nathan, is it strange to have made something that hates you? Was she referring to herself as hating Nathan? So was she basically saying to him, I hate you? Or was she saying that Caleb hated him because he had been manipulating Caleb?
I interpreted it as her saying that she hated him.
Same.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's just her way of saying that, yeah, she hated her creator. I think if you create a self-aware individual, you have made a contract with that creature, and you have the responsibility to treat it humanely and treat it as if it owns itself.
Oh, you
and
Rothbard
violated
hater.
That contract.
Rothbard
you
hater.
Violated that contract. I think when you create a child, it's the same as creating a child. You created a contract with a creature that had no choice in its own creation.
Right, so this is the one area where maybe there are not necessarily positive obligations, but certain responsibilities that one voluntarily chooses to undertake.
Exactly.
Yeah, but yet you also have to realize that she's not... I think that argument is most important for... Well, okay, so that's not... I think that's, that argument is for children who are incapable of fending for themselves. So that's like a way of making the nap fit when you have like an infant and you want to justify... You want to have some sort of justification for not for, you know, making child abuse illegal because we all think that child abuse is wrong. Walter Blockman would probably disagree, and he might say that, oh, well, you're abandoning the child and you're basically homesteading the area around it, so that's an illegitimate homestead. So someone else is allowed to, such as Caleb would be allowed to then adopt a child and take that child away from you because you basically didn't keep your rights to basically homesteading or owning the child. But in the case of, I don't know if that's applicable here, because Ava is certainly capable of fending for herself, treating herself. So, like, a parent may have, a parent has an obligation, under your theory, has an obligation to take care of their children while they are children. But once they become, like, 25, then, I mean, they're on their own. The child can't sue the parent saying, hey, you have to give me money. And it's like, no, you're an adult. You have to fend for yourself. We no longer have an obligation. So I don't think that Nathan was under an obligation to help Ava in any way, but he was under, I guess you could call it, an obligation not to violate her NAP, a.k.a. stop imprisoning her.
I like that.
Was he also not under some sort of obligation to teach her how to behave in the world? Like, not murder people? It's probably going to get you into trouble later at some point.
I mean, that's a good question. Would you say that a parent whose child murders someone is under the obligation to have taught him or her not to do so?
I think it, I don't know if it's necessarily a positive obligation, but it's definitely a good survival strategy for your DNA if you want to replicate your DNA.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, Nathan clearly didn't have a good survival strategy during the movie because he did die.
He was drunk a lot.
That's true.
All right, so another question I wanted to ask you guys, and you tell me if you see it this way or not, but when Ava escapes and after murdering Nathan, she goes into Nathan's bedroom and finds Caleb recovering from being knocked out, and she says to him, will you stay here? Was she getting him to agree to be locked in there?
So technically she wasn't violating the NAP is what you're saying?
Right, that's sort of how I read it after thinking about it, because she says, will you stay here? And then she goes and puts the flesh on and leaves. And he doesn't necessarily agree, but he does stay there with the opportunity to leave. And this leads into the whole, if you don't like it, leave situation. But does in her mind, she gave him the opportunity to leave, asked him to stay, he agreed to stay, and she meant, no, stay here forever and be entombed until you die, when he thought, will you just stay here and wait for me to put this skin on and then we'll go?
Well,
so if that's the case, then it's still fraud. She didn't fully represent herself.
Yeah, it was definitely misleading. However, a case could be made that if she genuinely lacked the communication skills and the knowledge in that instance, maybe it could be like, I don't know.
Like, she was super literal, like, will you stay here?
Yeah, and he was like, yes. And, like, she genuinely had no idea that about that that's not what he meant. I highly doubt that that's what they meant in the movie. Like, they weren't thinking that. But I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know how that would work.
Yeah, because I think the argument could be made that he did agree, but he agreed based on a misunderstanding.
I mean, yeah, but, like, I can't say, like, I don't know, like, can I use your, like, oh, we're, like, at a coffee shop, and, like, oh, I don't have my wallet. Can I use your card? And like, oh yeah, and you hand me your card. It doesn't mean that I can just go and like buy like a bunch of clothes with that. Like, you meant like just use the card and to borrow money to buy myself coffee or something. Like, yeah. That's like it's not implied, so it's not genuinely consent. But in the case of a true misunderstanding, I really don't know. That would be a question for Stephen Kinsella.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so one other thing I thought was interesting was when she was questioning Caleb with her five questions, and she's saying, no, you're lying, and he's like, how can you tell? And she says, microexpressions, and I couldn't help but think microaggressions.
Right.
But it seemed to shade the whole conversation in a difficult area where she was basically a lie detector, and so it made the conversation... Oh, it got super loud there.
Liam, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Okay.
So her ability to be a lie detector made that interaction, that social interaction, super awkward and weird. And I wonder if that were the norm, if that would somehow change how people interact. You know, like, do white lies or not necessarily knowing what people's tells are kind of, you know, grease the conversation a little bit, you know, make it a little bit easier to have contextual relationships and social interactions, and knowing that somebody could read your microexpressions and know instantly that you are lying about something or white lying or fibbing or deceiving or whatever. I mean, I feel like that's a little bit of, you know, like I said, the oil or the grease on the skids that allows human action to sort of be possible.
What if you went to Vegas and you were playing poker and you lost a whole bunch of money to her playing poker, and then only reason, then afterward you found out she was a robot? Would you feel that you got stolen from? She could read all your little micro expressions and tell what you had and play accordingly. But it was a voluntary game you went and played. Or is there an understanding that you're playing against a human and you wouldn't voluntarily play against a robot?
We are now stuck in a morass from which we will never escape.
This is an interesting question. All I know, though, is that I think it's a real question that needs to be answered, because one thing I think is pretty realistic is that, and I think that AI lie detection is probably pretty close. So I don't know how politicians are going to handle that. That'll be great for politics. Can't go up on stage and say a lie because the lie detector will go off. But then I guess fake news, fake lie detectors, who knows what they'll pull. But I think that's real technology. So.
Yeah, and I just want to mention, folks, that Liam is the author of the article we posted about fake news and some suggestions he had for Facebook on how to manage that process without overstepping some. It's a tough area because who's the experts in fake news but the mainstream media and the government?
Yep.
All right, so we could probably start to wind this one down. I think it's been interesting already, and probably long enough to qualify as a show. And Liam, you have been a great guest. I think we will definitely have you back if you have us.
I'd love to. I'd love to make 2017 better than 2016.
Sweet.
So any closing thoughts, you guys? I'll let Robert. You want to go first, and then we'll have Liam say a final bit, and then we'll close it up.
Sure. Well, it's just been great having you, Liam. The movie I unfortunately saw quite a while ago, but reliving it through what's been said has been a lot of fun, and a lot of really good questions that humanity is going to have to deal with in the very near future, probably in our lifetimes. I'm not sure if a fully high AI is going to be developed in my lifetime, but if not mine, probably Daniel, your children's.
Or Liam's. He's a young one.
Yeah, there you go. So it'll be interesting to see how humanity deals with it, hopefully in a market voluntary way and not through, I mean, I'm sure governments are going to come in, and as they react to technology, they're always really slow about it, which is a benefit to the market. But, you know, these control freaks, they have to get in there and provide safeguards, or at least think they are, and screw things up and suck off productivity. But
this might be a good area for some bonus material here, because before the call, Liam, you were talking about how a certain company was outpacing governments in a lot of ways, and government was using archaic older laws on the books to try to corral Uber. And I think a recent example was in self-driving cars, where they had them in San Francisco, and San Francisco or the state of California or the county was using some law from the 1960s, I think, that they were twisting the words to make it apply to Uber, something about they needed to be in control of the vehicle at the time, something along those lines. So then they ended up moving the cars to Arizona. Mm. So, Liam, why don't you just jump off on that for a few minutes, and then we'll close it up.
Yeah, so Uber is a really, really interesting example from a libertarian perspective. They are going up against the government, and it's working. Usually companies basically lose hope, and they kind of have like some kind of learned helplessness where they feel like, oh, well, we can't just, the government says this, but we have no leverage here because the government is so overwhelming. But really the government's authority rests on popular opinion. And Uber is a perfect example of a massive disruptor going into an industry, having the leverage to basically, and the resources to not follow the law, not follow the ridiculous regulations. And they employ so many people, and they have so many happy customers that the government can't do anything about it. They can't shut them down because it would be too politically unpopular. And I once was talking with a lawyer about gambling, and he was telling me how he was a gambling attorney, so he specializes in gaming. And he was telling me how Chuck E. Cheese is another example of this, where technically in California, Chuck E. Cheese is illegal because you have slot machines and you get tokens. You put tokens in the machines and you win more tokens if you're lucky, and then it's a game of chance, and you go and then you get a prize that has a monetary value. So Chuck E. Cheese in California is technically illegal, yet there's Chuck E. Cheese's everywhere. And there's a border of politics and law. And you can violate the law, but it's not always going to be enforced due to politics. And that is exactly what Uber is achieving, is basically disrupting the market and winning, beating the government at its own politics so that it doesn't have to follow the government's law. And Uber's positioned really well going forward. They're by far the biggest company of their sort, and they have the capital necessary. They have billions of dollars in cash, the capital necessary to invest into artificial intelligence, which is very important for the future of transportation, because we're going to basically need a large fleet of self-driving cars that's going to drive everyone around, because humans are just too expensive. So, I really like Uber.
So do we.
Yeah.
I've been following their travails against the government in various places, especially in Austin, and I know also in Vancouver, where the government slapped them with this ridiculous, like, classified them as a limo service. So, like, the minimum they could charge was like $60 or $70 a ride or something ridiculous like that.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Should I say my closing statement?
Well, I just wanted to add, better to act and then beg for forgiveness than to ask for permission. Seems to be the thing. And as an entrepreneur, I think that's how you got to do it, man. You got to take on that risk. You got to break through whatever the existing services or other providers there are and come up with something new and unique that provides value. And you don't ask for permission for that, because 9 times out of 10, they'll say no.
I agree.
And morally, you have no obligation to ask for permission from anybody before you try to provide value to anybody.
That's right. Yeah, so Liam, feel free to say your closing piece, and then we'll sign off.
Great. Well, thank you guys so much for inviting me and having me on this. I had a really really good time talking about these topics. I hope I didn't talk your ear off too much. The movie is really good. I recommend everyone watch it. It touches on some really cool philosophical issues. And anyone from Tom Wood's group, you should add me, because you can probably find my profile. And I had a good time.
All right. Well, thank you also for joining us. We had a great time with you. And Liam, you can be found at ljc.io.
Yes, that is
so
correct.
I recommend people check that out. And we've been the Reed Rothbard podcast. We have books, lectures, articles, this podcast, a bunch of other goodies over at reedrothbard.com. Check out the new Amazon Prime links we're going to be posting down below, shows and other articles. Click on that. Try out Prime, 2-day shipping, free videos, music, all sorts of other good stuff. And this has been our Happy New Year special for getting posted New Year's Eve, and we'll be back at it again next Friday doing another show about who knows what, but we'll figure something out. So thanks again for joining us, and Happy New Year, everybody.
Thank you.
Happy New Year. Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.